You're a pro.
I try. Okay, we're in process.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for coming to the teleseminar tonight. This is Jeannie Patel-Thompson. I specialize in natural healing methods for IBD and IBS. And tonight, I am interviewing Marlene Cray, who is a pH body balance expert. And I love a quote from your website, Marlene, so I'm just going to read it here. You say, if you can shift your perspective of food and water from simply being fuel and hydration and develop your understanding of you are what you eat, meaning maintenance and healing comes from what we ingest, you will begin to understand why we as a world have become too acidic. So, Marlene, welcome, and thanks so much for being here tonight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I think it's always wonderful to work with, you know, what you do is you target a specific area, and then what I do is more foundational to bridge the basic nutritional deficit.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because a friend of mine, a medical doctor, he sent me a paper all about the intestinal luminal pH in inflammatory bowel disease. And it's very interesting because the paper actually has charts comparing what the normal pH is for, say, a healthy person throughout their gastrointestinal tract versus someone who has ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease.
And did it give you the numbers? What are the numbers? I'm curious.
Yes. I will read them out for you here. Mm-hmm. Actually, just before we get into that, Marlene, I'm just going to mute everybody else on the line so we don't get any background noise. Just hang on a minute. Okay, we're muted. We're in lecture mode here. So for a healthy volunteer, the small bowel pH ranged from 6.6 in the proximal intestine to 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into the colon, and the right side of the colon, the average pH was 6.4, and mm-hmm. the left side of the colon going down into the rectum was 7.1.
Interesting, okay.
Does that sound...
Yeah, it sounds absolutely right, because the colon would capture more toxins than the intestinal tract.
Yes, exactly.
So the toxins are going to increase the level of acidity.
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
In this case, you know, the pH scale goes 0 to 14, 7 being neutral, so anything below 7 is too acidic, anything above is alkaline. And
right.
as you go down from 7 to 1, just for the benefit of the audience, what happens is it's a compounding factor, so, you know, 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more acidic, and the same thing going up. So from 7.1 to 6.4 is almost 10 times more acidic.
Oh, interesting. See,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
And then with disease, what is it?
With ulcerative colitis, which has a big change, in the colon, the right side of the colon is 7.2. Which for the normal bowel, it's only 6.4. So
right.
that's way more alkaline, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the left side of the colon going into the rectum is...
So it's not working properly, right? Okay.
No, it's reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing about in ulcerative colitis of the pH being more alkaline, my understanding of probiotic therapy is that the good bacteria need that certain level of acidity, and if you make it too alkaline, the good bacteria can't live, and Candida and a whole bunch of pathogenic species take over. Because
well,
they
you know, the
better.
Other thing though is that when your body in any area of your body goes into crisis,
mm-hmm.
it pulls out the all the alkaline stops come out, and it may flush it with alkalinity, thinking that it's helping. See, and it's actually not in this case, but it's like if you have, occasionally you'll run into someone that's highly alkaline, but they're very, very sick. It's because their body's pulling out all the stops to try to fix them.
Right. So now when you talk about someone who's very alkaline, what exactly are you referring to? Are you referring to blood, saliva, urine, what?
Okay, so that's a good question, because when I speak to pH balance, what
mm-hmm.
I'm speaking to is the basic blood environment is 96% water, and then you have tissues, And, you know, our bodies are about 70-plus percent water, but the blood's 96% water. So I'm talking about that basic alkalinity. Now, when traditional medicine speaks to pH, what they typically speak to is the deep vein artery blood. The deep vein artery blood is needs to be neutral. And what happens with that is pretty fascinating, because in the deep vein artery blood, if you move 2 points in either direction, your body can't survive. Because remember that compounding factor, right? Now that's in the deep vein artery blood. So what happens is, just like your body temperature or any of your other measurements, if your deep vein artery blood started to become too acid because of whatever disease or whatnot, your body would pull a real high pH mineral like calcium from your bones, which is a 12 pH, and again, compounded, you know, that's, you know, what, several thousand times more alkaline, or a 14 pH, which is potassium, and send it to the deep vein artery blood to neutralize the acidity so that you didn't go 2 points either way.
Right.
So what your body's doing is protecting you, so it's a good, bad thing, right? Because it's pulling calcium from your bones, which could put you into an osteostate if that went on too long.
That, you know, that's something I've heard from I don't know how many holistic practitioners, and they say, you know, medical science tends to focus on the blood, but the body will preserve the, you know, whatever the markers are in the blood at all costs.
At all
costs. So it's really the last fluid and place in the body you should be testing.
Well, and actually, so the deep vein artery blood is a very ambiguous measurement, because it will regulate itself. And how I interpret that is this, is that your life-giving organs, which would be your heart, your liver, your kidneys, and so forth, they are prioritized first. Your body prioritizes those first. Your walking is a gift. It's not a priority to live. So it has to be life-giving in order to get priority. And so what's interesting here is that I would say 98 to 99% of all the calcium stored in your body is in your bones, and the other 1 to 2% is going through your tissues and your blood to help regulate, you know, acidity, right? And that is the first thing that gets hit. And look at all the people that are taking calcium supplements. I mean, just look at all the people that are taking calcium supplements.
Right.
Because they're trying to prevent. And so see how I perceive.
I'm getting you. Okay, go on. I think I've got
So what how I perceive supplementation is very basic. Foundational supplementation is the difference between what we eat and what our body requires. So the difference, if we're not getting what we require, has to come from a whole food supplement source, because your body is designed to accept nutrition from food. And food cofactors vitamins and minerals. And what that means is if you have a head of broccoli, it's going to have the appropriate vitamins and minerals that go together for broccoli.
Exactly.
If you separate vitamins and minerals and put them into two pills, they're not going to work. You've got to have the cofactoring. So basically, whole food supplementation is your best source to do foundational nutrition.
Yeah.
Once you've balanced your nutrition, then then the next form of supplementation would be targeting, which is what you do. You take people that have developed disorders. Mm-hmm. You target that area while you're doing foundational until you no longer need to target or until you've minimized the targeting. It's always going to be your weak zone. It's always going to be a memory zone. But it doesn't mean that forever you have to be subjected to it. It means that you need to do your foundational and target. And then the third set of supplementing is always subjective cleansing, and that can be passive, assertive, or aggressive.
And that's like a cleansing, a detox type of?
Yeah, cleansing or a detox. And there's, you know, lots of different passive ways to do it where you don't have symptoms. You know, mostly today people have these seven-day, 24-hour lifestyles, and it's very difficult for them to cleanse. So a lot of times it's about giving you passive ways to cleanse that you can get the same thing accomplished. It may take you a month or two that you could do in a week cleanse, but really what is cleansing? Cleansing is putting your body functions on vacation, because everything we do in our body, we are alkaline, by design, and we are acid by function. So whether we're breathing or we're eating or we're thinking or we're talking or we're stressing out, by the way, stress is 10 times more acidic than any food you can eat, whether we're doing any of those functions, what happens is when you cleanse, you want to put as many of those functions on vacation as possible. So what do we have control over? What we eat, and that's why a lot of cleanses require pureed food. It's not because you have to have pureed food to cleanse. It's because you want to put your digestive system on vacation.
Exactly.
So you're not creating acid. So it kind of gives you leverage like a teeter-totter. Well,
okay.
If I can put these things on vacation, then I can get my pH up faster. I can get rid of more toxins.
Okay. I want to back up for just a minute what you were talking about before about whole food vitamin complexes versus isolated, you know, just vitamin C on its own, for example. The only thing I have to add to that is for people with intestinal diseases, often their gut functioning is so compromised and it's so hypersensitive that they cannot tolerate a whole food vitamin or mineral supplement. So what we then have, we almost have to work backwards. So we have to use...
Target first.
Yeah, we have to use the isolated ones first, but again, like the ones that I put in my meal replacement formula, Absorb Plus, you know, something like 98% of them are still natural extracted isolated vitamins. So I still try to get them from a natural source or, and this is something I want to talk to you further about later on, the nanoparticle minerals are, you know.
Oh, now see, that becomes a mineral that is totally similar to what your body produces. So, of course, that's going to be totally absorbable.
Well, and now, so let me ask you about that just quickly then, because I've just started testing nanoparticle minerals. I'm testing the bone support that you sell in your shop, and I'm also testing a nanoparticle iron with vitamin C. So I've been doing this for just a few months, and then I actually contacted the manufacturer of the bone support product, and I said, you know, because what I'm looking for, because, you know, like you, I've been in this business over 20 years, and I've seen a lot of things that look good on the surface, and then, oops, we never knew it was actually really harmful because of this, this, and that. So I'm very hesitant to jump on new things. I want to see, okay, what's the long-term consequence of this? So I had emailed him. And he said that his family has been using them for 20 years now, ever since they started manufacturing them. Well, he doesn't say manufacture. He says we grow them because they actually grow the mineral crystals.
They grow the crystal minerals.
Yeah. And then he also gave me a whole list of autism clinics who've been using them for 2 years.
In fact, I do a lot of work with autism.
Okay.
One of the things about minerals that's really interesting that most people don't understand, and yet it's really the basic foundation of understanding them, is that, you know, your body has different molecular sizes. So your cells, there's 20 different cell sizes in your body. And so if you were to line them up as like little circles on a piece of paper, and they just got bigger and bigger and bigger, your eye cells would be the smallest, right? And then you would have 20 different sizes of cells. Well, when you start talking about liquid minerals, first of all, you have a category, and that would be colloidal.
Yes.
Would be the largest. Mm-hmm. And it affects the colloidal would affect the environment around the cell, but it has no way to get into the cell because it's too big.
Right.
But the cell would reach out and feed off of that environment. So eventually you would get some benefit on it. The problem or the challenge I see with colloidal is that it can start compounding in your system because it does hang out in the environment and it is particle. The next level is ionic. Ionic, and then it goes to parts per million. Ionic could be anywhere from 100 to 300-400 parts per million. And so that would be the next size up, I mean next size down, the next smaller size.
Mm-hmm.
But the colloidal to ionic is a huge jump. It's like a basketball to a baseball.
Right.
Then the next size is angstrom, and that goes about 500 to 800, 900 parts per million. And it's real tiny. Ionic and angstrom can both go into many of the cells, you know, just kind of float through them. Mm-hmm. And then the next size that you're talking about is the mini, which could be angstrom. Many of the minis are considered angstrom. And then molecula, which is a new process, well, maybe 3 years old, which creates a gaseous mineral. And so, like, we have the gaseous or the molecular silver, there's only three minerals, silver, platinum, and gold. And what happens with the molecular is it actually is so small that you'll see one or two parts per million on the bottle. And what mm-hmm. that means is that's what's left after they've exploded all the other particles. So it's so small they can't count it. It can't be measured. And
right.
so they have to actually test molecula by effect, so that they'll take a vial of viruses, pour molecula into it, wait a certain amount of time, and then count how many viruses are left.
Oh!
And that's how they have to test molecula, because it's so small it goes right through all the cells.
Wow.
So we use a lot of molecular silver only because it's so potent as an antiviral, antibacterial. And an interesting thing that happens is this, you know, you're familiar with the angstrom calcium, right?
Yeah.
So you take, one of the interesting things to do is if you take angstrom calcium, what does it do? If you take, like, say, an ounce of it, it'll float your pH up real high because it carries a 12 pH, and angstrom goes through all your blood cells. So your whole body in about 3 or 4 minutes will go up real high on your pH,
mm-hmm.
and then that weakens all the, any kind of bacteria or virus in your body, because they need acid to survive. Anything bad requires acid to grow, whether it's bacteria, virus, yeast, fungus, whatever it is. It requires an acidic environment to grow. So if you raise the alkalinity or become pH balanced, it can't grow. So you raise the alkalinity up with this little ounce of calcium. You wait. We usually set the timer for exactly 5 minutes and then take an ounce of silver. What you've done is you've made everything really vulnerable, and then the silver whacks it out.
Right.
So we do that a lot, like during flu season.
Well, and I stole that idea from you. I'm going to tell you outright. I stole it from you, and I put it in because I developed a new antipathogen protocol.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being published in this month's info letter, and it uses the molecular silver,
mm-hmm.
DMSO,
right,
tea tree oil,
right,
and I'm drawing a blank.
So the
aloe vera juice, George's aloe vera juice, which
okay.
buffers the DMSO and the tea tree. And so I included that. I said, okay, to make this, you know, to even just bump it up again to the next level, get the bone support, take it 5 minutes before,
right,
and then do the antipathogen protocol.
And we're doing that, you know, daily now with the, and we're not doing ounces or anything. We're just doing a little bit. But I also put the molecular silver into a nasal spray bottle, and we carry that with us in our purse or whatever if I go into the mall or go somewhere. Because, I mean, silver acts as a second immune system. And
yeah.
so it will, you breathe in or you swallow antigens. And typically that's how they're going to get into your body. And so even if you're pH balanced, you know, you're not always going to be pH balanced, even if you always are, because stress will dip your pH, or this or that will dip your pH, or not sleeping well, or, you know, whatever it is,
yeah.
and make you vulnerable. So we just do that all the time as preventive. But the truth is that this all this stuff, you know, all these acronyms for different diseases and all this stuff, really became apparent like in the early 1930s, because that was when there was a guy in Florida, his name was Dr. Charles Northern, and he started testing soil around the country for whatever mm-hmm. reason. I think he just wanted to test the soil to see what the mineral levels were and what the soil-based organisms were like. And he came back and he ended up doing a U.S. Senate document, and he got a congressman on board, and they took it to the Congress, and they said, unless something is done about the poor nutrient content in the soil, there will be a serious rise in degenerative disease within 50 years. And that was 1936. Then we had
what?
Yeah, guess what? And then we had World War II, and at the end of that, you know, if you're schooled at all in natural medicine, you know that a lot of the chemicals and the pesticides and stuff like that left over from the war got sent to the farmers. And it wasn't all because the country wanted to kill our food. It was because we had a huge growth population, and they wanted to grow it bigger, better, faster, and they wanted to keep the capitalism or the economy going in all these countries after they did after they went through the war. So, you know, Canada, the U.S., you know, all the countries around the world except New Zealand ended up dumping a bunch of chemicals onto their soil, and then that killed all the microorganisms. And from then till now, the soil is just so depleted, the food is so degraded, and then it just, it's a domino effect from what you grow in the soil agriculturally, plus the chemicals, plus the pesticides, but then the domino effect is, you know, the cattle, the chickens, the eggs, the this, the that, the next thing. And so that's why pH was even something that came in to be tested, because what's interesting, you know, the, you know, you're familiar with Earth Summit, and Earth Summit in 1992 did a report, and in that report they said 99% of North Americans are mineral deficient. Yeah. Well, that wasn't enough. Then they went through South America, Asia, Africa, Europe, Australia, and the numbers were less than North America, by the way, which I thought was really interesting. Well, in the next year, the World Health Organization said, we don't believe what Earth Summit said, so we are going to go test it ourselves. And they ended up saying that the breadbasket of the world, which is North America, was rated as the worst soil, and it's completely 95% deplete in basic survival nutrients. That was in 93. Wow. And then we wonder, okay, then what happened? We have, you know, the advent after World War II, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, fast food. And we have, you go into a supermarket, which used to be produce on one side and poultry and meats on the other, into now, today we go to a supermarket, and 80% is dry goods and processed foods.
Yep, exactly.
So how do you ingest that stuff, right?
It's,
and then we have one.
It's a bizarre kind of poverty for me to walk into, you know, like a Safeway or a, whatever would be like the huge your huge local supermarket, and to gaze around and go, I cannot eat because I don't allow myself 95%
of what's in this store.
Entire store. And it's like, I'm like poorer than, you know, the local villager going to his farmer's market.
It's absolutely, it is. And that's how I feel too. But the truth is, if you, you know, you have to really, if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it.
Exactly.
Well, and it's, even, it's fascinating, you know, what you were, to me, the chemical induced conventional meat and produce, and everybody's just buying it like it's fine.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Or saying, well, it's not worth it to buy organic. You know, we'll, you know, I mean, what
less
could
is
be more worth
organically.
It?
Organically. You know, less is more. So you're getting higher density nutrition, and so you eat less. And it's a paradigm shift, I think. But,
yeah.
I mean, just look at high fructose corn syrup. You know, I was thinking about this. I was doing a training about a year ago, and I had pulled out all my high fructose corn syrup stuff because I don't like to let go of that. I think it's really critical. And you think about this. Now, first of all the city water is, you know, filled with just all these chemicals and things like that anyway, right? And then you walk into a 7-Eleven or a fast food restaurant, you know, or something, and they've got these high fructose corn syrup sodas hooked up to city water. And high fructose corn syrup, by the way, is not recognized by your body as a food, so it goes to your liver, just like alcohol does. So we have all of our children drinking these drinks, and their livers look like alcoholics.
And also, do you know, does it come out in the urine, or what happens to
it? Well, it has
to
come through the liver and then out through the urine. But the liver gets backed up, and that's why we have so many kids that are so overweight. It's not so much, you know, I mean, everybody says, oh, the kids don't play, the kids don't do this, the kids don't do that. The problem is that the food they're ingesting is not real food, so they can't absorb nutrition from it. You know, you eat your food, it goes into your stomach processes it through to your intestines process it, and at that point it's up, it's in microscopic form, and it gets uptakes into your blood system, and it becomes microscopic particles into your blood to feed you. And what's going on is when you eat cooked food all the time, obviously you're not going to be digesting anymore, so you're shoving a bunch of food down there that's not digested. Then the biggest problem is your body can't break it down, your body can't absorb it. And then at the end of the day, your body's spending more time trying to get rid of the bad stuff than extracting the good stuff because it's so hard to find. So
exactly.
Everyone is, you know, basically I think they're destroying the digestive process, but they're also not getting nutrition. And then they go into a deficit. When you go into a deficit of nutrition, your fat cells are like the body's soldiers. And
right.
What they do is if you have a defensive body, they will start absorbing all the toxins in the body, and then you get fatter and fatter and fatter because you get more and more toxic.
Yeah,
and
because they need to trap them.
Mm-hmm, it traps it because why? Goes back
they want
to that
keep it out of
concept.
Circulation. They want to keep it out of your blood.
But, well, and your organs are your last line of defense, right?
Yep.
And so your body protects your heart and your organs first, and so if the fat cells trap it, then it doesn't. It's not going to burn through your organs. You know, here's how you do it: is you have symptoms. The next level is chronic symptoms. The next level is a diagnosis, and then the next level, which is called disease, is actually affects your organs, and that's where it goes into a disease situation. So when people decide where they're at on that scale, that tells them how aggressively or passively or assertively they need to work to get to the other end. When they come to you, they're already at a diagnosis disease situation, and
mm-hmm.
that's why there's so much targeting going on, because if you don't do excessive target while you're doing foundational, you're never going to get back to the middle. You're never going to get back to the middle.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's the other thing I say to people. I say, you know, the goal of true healing is not to take handfuls of supplements for the rest of your life. However, there, you will need to take a lot of supplements for probably a few years to heal and restore your body's normal functioning to where you can extract those nutrients from your regular diet, assuming you're eating organically, preferably biodynamically grown food, you know, and your food sources are basically as high as you can get them.
One of the interesting things they have now is I've been doing this last year. I've been researching a lot of different labels because many, many of the organic farms are getting bought up. But so they have these new labels. One is naturally grown, and what that is local farmers that aren't using chemicals or pesticides. Then they have agricultural pesticide-free. Now, if you pick up a carton of Roma tomatoes, it's going to say Roma tomatoes on it. And then when you go to see who, you know, where they came from, right beside mm-hmm. it'll say agriculturally chemical-free. But they're not allowed to, like, put a big sticker or anything. You have to, like, look at the small print, like where the address would be.
Okay.
But agriculturally chemical-free is not any more expensive than over-the-counter vegetables or conventional vegetables. And it's a brand-new label, and it's very fascinating to me that there's so much of it out there and we don't even know it.
Right.
But a lot of farmers are doing that.
I don't know how in-depth you've gone into this, because I know from talking to the farmers around here, if they label something as no spray, which I guess would be that equivalent, it doesn't mean that the soil doesn't contain pesticides, and it doesn't mean that they haven't put pesticides in when they're planting.
Here's the fallacy of the soil, though, is it used to, at least in the States, it used to be that you had to have so many years of clean soil, you know, meaning not growing anything on it, not putting anything on it. So it was 3 years of that and then a year of growing, and then you could be certified organic, right?
Yes.
Well, that changed when a lot of the popular food companies began growing organic food.
Yeah.
And it started with, what do we feed the cows? Well, let's call it organic. And so they got it passed that you really could call it organic after a year. And so now the organic label is, or the spray-free label is 1 year, no pesticides. No, it doesn't mean it's not in the ground. But what it does mean is that even if it says organic, it doesn't mean it's not in the ground. What it means
exactly.
is it's probably 60 to 70% better than the conventional
yes.
because it's not getting the top spray.
Exactly.
And here's the other thing that's really interesting. the hardier the vegetable, so if you look at broccoli or cauliflower, mm-hmm. It's not going to absorb toxins and pesticides and agricultural chemicals the way, say, lettuce would.
Right.
Because anything that's fragile is going to absorb it into the leaves quite readily because it's porous. So
yeah.
The denser the vegetable, you know, if you're on a budget,
yeah.
Choose your dense vegetables conventionally and your porous vegetables organically.
That's a really good way of putting it, rather than having to walk around with that list of what are the top pesticide contaminated fruits and vegetables. That's a very good way of putting it.
Yes, and I mean I send out those lists, you know, like everybody does, but I mean it comes down to basics, right?
Yeah.
If it's porous, it's going to have more.
Yep, exactly.
I have the, you know, so organically grown, and then look at fish. You know, I always buy cold water wild fish, and we don't eat meat per se at our house, but we do eat fish. So I always buy cold water wild because in the coldest waters, in the wild waters, there's the least amount of metals and mercury and things like that.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll do cold water wild salmon and cod. I never do bottom fish, and I just make really basic choices. You know, it's now everything has to be labeled, so it's not so hard. What's difficult is you have to read everything.
Yes,
because
exactly.
They'll say cold water wild, and then it'll be from China.
Yeah. So, just a quick thing about the labeling. Have you noticed that since there's been all this media around the high fructose corn syrup that the manufacturers are now, they haven't excluded it from the products, but they've changed what they're calling it, and they're calling it glucose hyphen fructose.
Yes.
The same substance.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, is that crazy? First of all,
corn,
before you go through that process of turning it into, you know, alcohol with all the yeast and stuff, is the most acidic vegetable you can eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an engineered food. And so for the, no matter what it's called, when it's corn, it's corn, it's corn, you know, that's what I tell people, just leave corn alone, you know. Indian corn, you know, the original corn, has half or a third of the acidity of yellow corn or white corn.
Is that because it's not as sweet?
It's because it's a natural corn and it's not engineered.
Mm.
And yes, too, because it's not so sweet. But that's a fallacy, too. If you had an orange tree in your backyard, and you picked an orange. Now, see, lemons are pre-digestively acidic but post-digestively highly alkaline because they have a strong phytochemical nutrition that your body wants to extract and use. And then as it goes through your body process, it leaves a real high alkaline ash. So then the next question everybody says, well, what about grapefruit? What about oranges? You know, citrus to citrus. Well, and then a lot of the pH people will say, well, orange has a lot of sugar in it, so that's, you know, acid because sugar turns to acid, which it does. But the truth is, if you had an orange tree in your backyard and you picked the orange when it was ripe and you ate it, it would probably be pretty good for you. The problem is, in today's market, they pick them all green and ferment them to market. And so they're sitting in the back of a truck turning orange, which makes them more and more acidic.
Right.
So a lot of this acidity is coming from how we treat our food as much as how we grow it.
Yes.
You know,
and then you look at the vitamin and mineral levels of fruit and vegetables that are allowed to ripen, you know, naturally, you know, vine ripened versus, like you said, picked green and ripening afterwards. And you just, you know, there's a huge difference in the nutrient levels between the two.
And here's what's fascinating. You know, I say this and people go, what? You've got to be kidding. But this is true. The nutrients that your body requires every day is 13 different vitamins. 9 of them need to be water-soluble, which means they're not stored in your body. 4 mm-hmm. of them are fat-soluble, which means they are stored. So 13 different vitamins, 20-plus minerals, and that would be large and the trace, the 3 essential fatty acids, and 8 amino acids. I mean, that for every 30 to 50 pounds of body weight, you need a quart of water just to replace your body weight once a month. I mean, your body water once a month, so you're not like, you know, a vase of flowers that's sitting there fermenting after 3 weeks because we forgot to throw it out. So, but that's a lot of nutritional requirements out of the food that we have available to us. But the truth is, if you meet that requirement, your cycle of regeneration for your heart, your pancreas, your blood has a 16-week cycle of regeneration. That means if you choose to have healthy blood, you can get real focused on it through adequate hydration and foundational nutrition and do some things like lemon and good oils and things like that and, you know, eat a healthy dinner so you don't go to bed still digesting. In 16 weeks, you can change the way your blood looks. In 32 weeks, you can change the way your heart is. In 24 weeks, your pancreas. Your spleen in 24 weeks. Your bones in 12 weeks. Your liver in 6 weeks. But here's what happens. Our liver regenerates every 6 weeks. But if we don't change what we're doing, it regenerates the same way. The cells just duplicate.
Yeah.
You have to create healthy new cells instead of your body producing the same deformed cells.
Okay, so give us a program.
So the program is, you know, your basic foundation is that you want to have a really good salt. So you want to do like a gray sea salt or something that's a natural salt because your body is 70% water, but it's also water just like the ocean. So just like the ocean replenishes itself and cleans itself with the salt water, that's what your body does. So you have to have a really good salt.
The gray Celtic sea salt or the Himalayan salt?
Great. My first choice is Himalayan. My second is gray sea salt. And my third is REAL, real salt. And all three are pretty available.
Okay.
And I use that for a number of reasons. One is that it balances your trace minerals. It balances your electrolytes. It helps cleanse your body. You know, you can take that salt and put a couple teaspoons in half a glass of warm water, three to four, depending on who you are and what's going on. You can put a little bit of salt in water and drink it, and it'll have health properties. More salt will flush your bowels. So people that get constipation, that's going to help them. So salt is basic. I think montmorillonite clay is basic. I think whole food supplementation is basic because I use green.
Slow down. So you're saying salt. Number two, the montmorillonite, also known as the bentonite clay.
Well, it's not bentonite. It's calcium bentonite, not bentonite. There's a big difference.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me about
that. And the reason for that is when I talk about pH balance, acid, alkaline, what it really means is the number of negative ions in your body and the number of positive ions. And so anything negative is absolutely phenomenal for you. Anything positive is toxic.
Okay.
And so what's happening inside, not toxic in general, it's just acidic, I should say that. So what happens in your body is that the negative ions always have to be in control. And so what the clay does is it has a really strong negative charge, so it acts like a magnet for toxins. So if you think about the intestinal villi in your intestinal tract and you hold up your hand and see all your little fingers, in between your fingers you start collecting a bunch of toxins when you have intestinal tract disorders.
Right.
And you have little hairs on each one of your fingers, and what those hair and or the intestinal villi, and what those hairs do is absorb nutrition, and that's what, you know, that's how you uptake it into your blood. Well, when you're too acid, it'll burn the hairs off of your fingers, so you have a difficult time absorbing nutrition. The other thing is these toxins will collect. Well, as the clay comes through your intestinal tract, they're attracted like a magnet inside the clay to the clay, and then the clay sucks them up like a sponge, right, and pushes them through a bowel movement. And it's not done overnight. I mean, it's a passive cleanse. And so you just keep running clay water through your intestinal tract or through your body, and it picks up toxins all the way through. And eventually, all those toxins are pulled out of your colon and out of your intestinal tract, and then the little hairs grow back, and then you can absorb nutrition again.
Now, tell me again, what is this clay water? What's it called?
Clay is montmorillonite clay, and it's what we represent. We like the living clay, and so on our site, that's what we sell, because the living clay is, they test it every 3 months. They own the mine. And it's very powdery, it's very fluffy, and so when you put a teaspoon in water, you can just stir it, and it just disappears, and it's tasteless. And they don't say to drink it internally, but they say it's good enough to eat.
Now, with this living clay versus bentonite, because I know if you have problems with constipation, bentonite can be difficult for you.
Yes.
How does the living clay...
The living clay will either help diarrhea or constipation.
So it won't constipate you further?
No, it will not constipate you. Now, having said that, you do have to hydrate.
Yes.
You know, and I suggest people that have issues hydrate with lemon water anyway. So that they're, because when you hydrate with lemon water, it's interesting because your body wants that phytochemical nutrition out of the lemon. It will hold on to the water longer to get that nutrition out. Well, in the process of holding on to it, so say you're a sick person, you're diagnosed.
Yeah.
What happens when you drink water as a healthy person is your body breaks down the molecular structure and hydrates those 20 cells. What happens when you become a sick person is you drink the water and it goes right through and you pee because your body is handicapped in breaking it down. When you put lemon in the water, you're actually giving yourself like a cane to walk with because the body will hold on to the water with the lemon in it to get the nutrition. At the same time, it has a longer opportunity to break it down. So for people that have, you know, symptoms or chronic symptoms or diagnosis or disease, I always say do lemon. Lemon and good oils, you know, the good cold-pressed oils.
Okay, because, so give us your recipe for lemon water. What do we do?
Well, I do lemonade with a concentrated powdered stevia, and I use, to make a gallon, I make one cup of fresh lemon juice. I use a heaping half teaspoon of concentrated stevia and 1 gallon of pure water. And that's our drink of choice. Our other drink of choice at my home is rooibos red tea, and it sounds like the man's name Roy and the school bus, Roy Bus. But it's from South Africa. It's spelled R-O-O-I-B-O-S, not flavored, just the rooibos. It's available at all the markets now. And that red tea does not have, it's a red bush out of South Africa. It tastes just like black tea without any upset stomach afterwards and without caffeine and without those things. So we drink rooibos red tea and we drink lemonade, and those are our two drinks of choice. And the rooibos red tea has many, many, many times more antioxidants than green tea without acidity and without caffeine.
Yes, I love rooibos myself. Now, question for you. For the water, you've got your 1 gallon of water, your one cup of fresh lemon juice, and your heaping half teaspoon of stevia. Do you have to use one cup of lemon juice? Like, what if you used half a cup?
Well, one cup of lemon juice is a mild gallon. And so people can vary it either way. So if somebody has, for example, if somebody has a gastric intestinal thing, I have them do clay for a few weeks before I even put in the lemon because the clay will heal it so they can do the lemon.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, acid reflux, clay is just so phenomenal with those types of things. It's just amazing what the clay will do. I had a woman who had hurt her knee, and so every day she woke up, it would hurt to walk for a while, or she couldn't go to the mall because her knee would, and so it was in a constant state of inflammation. So I said to her, I said, put a clay paste, which is 3 parts clay, 1 part water, around your knee, all the way around like a circle, and then wrap it in saran wrap to keep the clay wet, because the clay's action will, you know, your skin is your third kidney. So whether it's an intestinal organ or your skin, this is going to draw toxins through the skin into the clay, and as long as the clay is wet, it's active. So she did that, and she said the strangest thing happened. About 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, she rolled over in bed, and she heard a big pop in her knee. And she got up the next day, and her knee was not hurting her. And she realized what happened is the inflammation had pushed her kneecap up and out of place, and the clay had pulled the inflammation out, and her kneecap just went back where it was supposed to be.
What would happen if you mixed the clay with castor oil and put it on?
I don't know what would happen with castor oil, but sometimes I do mix it with salt.
Oh, okay.
And I also mix it with different things like honey.
Right, yeah.
I'll do different things with it. I also put it in my salad dressing. So I'll make lemon juice or lime juice. I like lime juice in my salad dressing. Lime juice, oil, spices, and then I add a half teaspoon to a teaspoon of clay, and it will emulsify it like a store-bought, so it's thicker.
Oh, wow.
And then it holds in the refrigerator longer. And it's also good for you, so.
that's that's a really great way of, you know, taking it from being this like supplement to just being a part of your diet.
I do all of my supplementation, I integrate it into how I eat. So, for example, greens, you know, I use organic whole food greens, and I will put it into my salad dressing. I put it into, I use soy yogurt, so I put it into the yogurt. I put it in as food, especially for children. You know, it's really good because then you're getting the greens through your digestive system, and they're much easier to absorb. It's just like eating food. So there's two ways to do supplements. One is via water, which goes right into your intestinal tract, is what you were saying earlier. They can't, you know, people that are sick can't absorb it. Well, the reason is that if you don't take supplements with food, if you take supplements with food, it'll go through your digestive. If you take it in between food, it goes right into your intestinal tract. And
yeah.
If you're ill, you're not going to be able to uptake it. So it's better to do, you know, particles or things like that, or break down your supplements into your drinks like you do, you know, like your juice drinks and things like that.
Right. Okay, so we've got the Himalayan or Celtic sea salt. We've got the Montmorillonite living clay. We've got the lemon water and Ruibos red tea. What else?
I use a lot of whole food, and I don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen preparing food, but say I was going to prepare pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, shouldn't be eating pasta, but they really like pasta.
Right.
So what I do is I'll prepare pasta and I'll throw in the last 2 minutes a ton of vegetables. And then I use a vegetable broth, I add lemon juice and oil, and I make it into a sauce, and I toss and then I with the salt and organic pepper, and then I make that my sauce for my pasta. So then when you get to the end of the day, you're looking at your food and it's 70% healthy, but you're getting your pasta.
Right.
So all that is a long way around the bush to say what I do is I balance the bad with the good so that the good is always bigger than the bad.
Yes.
And so that when you are through, you're getting more nutrition, but you're feeling like you gave yourself something.
Exactly.
Even when you're sick and you're trying to break through some of these things, it's really important to understand your body can chelate just about anything if it has the correct tools. So if you're drinking lemonade, you're drinking rooibos tea, you're getting a lot more hydration than trying to force down a ton of water.
Mm-hmm.
If you're putting greens in your water or greens in your lemonade, you can get your whole food supplementation through your lemonade. You don't have to do a separate supplement.
Exactly.
And so I integrate that way. Here's another interesting trick. Not trick, but shortcut. Let's call it that.
Mm-hmm.
I make a lot of crock pot soups, especially now, fall to spring.
Yeah.
And crock pot soups mean that you don't have to digest them because it's a low heat, a constant low heat that cooks it, right? And so what that does, it's like eating baby food even though it's chunky. And so here's what we do. We make a bag of rice and a bag of little pasta noodles, and we put that in the refrigerator. And then we always have like parsley, cilantro, and a bunch of different greens in the refrigerator, spinach, you know, things like that. In the crock pot soup, I will scissor cut kale. I will scissor cut all the stuff nobody likes to eat right into the soup. And then what we do is in the bowl, we'll put a little scoop of rice and we'll put our seasonings for our soup so everybody gets to choose what they want. So I do blended seasonings. I don't do individual. So I might have herbs de Provence. I might have Italian, Mexican, you know, Greek. And I have these little bottles on the counter. And some people will put in a scoop of noodles. Some people will put in a scoop of rice. And then we put in our seasonings. And then we put in our fresh, you know, our parsley, our cilantro, our spinach. And then on top of that, we put in the crock pot soup. Phenomenal dinner, hearty. Everybody eats as much as they want. And the only thing that's bad in there is the little scoop of noodles or pasta.
Exactly. But, you know, you try to get kids to eat soup without pasta or something, you know, they just, they won't.
Kids
they'll maybe
love
have a
building their
and
own
then bored.
Soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, now,
build a soup.
What do you use as the base for the soup? Are you using broth or water? Or?
I use whatever vegetables are fresh at the market. And then I use a vegetable broth, and I usually, in fact, through the store, we do pounds of vegetable broth, but I use just the dry because you're getting a lot of broth out of the vegetables anyway when you put them in water, and then I just add powdered dry vegetable broth to it, and I only use salt and pepper in the soup because all the other spices, if you use them out of the jar in your bowl, you get medicinal value from them, like turmeric. If you put turmeric into your crock pot, you lose it because it gets hot.
Right.
See, so I use the spices as a supplement.
In the bowl, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. So I spend money on spices, but I only get blends. So I might spend $7 on a jar of spice, but it's a tri-blend or a quad blend or a, you know, five or six blends of something, and there's medicinal value there.
Exactly.
The other thing I do is if I'm making an un-chicken soup, which I make a lot, which is using like an un-chicken broth with a bunch of vegetables in it, I use ginger juice in it. It makes it phenomenal. It flavors it phenomenally well, and it makes it extremely easy to digest.
And you just take fresh ginger and press it?
I either take fresh ginger and press it, or ginger people have jars of that now.
Oh, okay.
It's a company, and they, you know, I actually buy it at a liquor store. Because they use it in drinks or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Right,
but
of course.
It's just, well, now I saw it at Whole Foods and some of the natural markets because they picked up on it. But I actually, for years, bought it at the liquor barn. And I don't drink, but I'd go into the liquor barn and buy all their different things because a lot of bartenders use a lot of really good stuff in their drinks. It's hysterical.
I'm not going to tell my dad that. He'll be like, oh, good, I can drink more. Okay, one thing I want you to do, Marlene, on that instant teleseminar page, on the right-hand side, you'll see a tab that says Q&A. Are you on that page still?
Okay, I've got a tab, and it says Q&A. Where is it? Oh, there it is. Okay, got it.
And then click on See All Questions.
Okay, we're there.
And those are questions people have been sending in.
So we have a ton of questions.
Are there? Oh, dear, I should have gone to it sooner. Okay, well, we'll just have to go over
time. We can go.
So go ahead and read out the question and then answer it.
All right, and you don't want me to read who's asking it?
Sure, if you want to.
Okay, I don't know how you do this. So
I just go, Steve from New York is asking.
So Suzanne's got lots of questions here. So is lemon added to water more effective in cellular hydration than adding a pinch of sea salt to your tongue with water? I think they're both – that's the first question. I think they're both good. I think what happens is this. The sea salt – affects you at a cellular level, meaning that it gives your cells energy. Mm-hmm. And that's always a really good thing. So it will perk you up. Sea salt will perk you up. You know, everything is energy in numbers, and so your body is all energy, and sea salt is amazing for that. You know, you think of the ocean, and a lot of people that live on the beach, they always say people are happy at the beach. It's because of the negative ions coming off of the salt air. Lemon, differently, is that the body will hold onto the lemon at the same time it's in the water, so the water can break down and hydrate your cells, which is the real thing that you want to do. You want to have cellular hydration, and with the 20 different cell sizes, that lemon is critical to do that. But that doesn't mean not to do the pinch of sea salt, because I do that too.
I have a question for you, Marlene. Do you have your instructions for the Himalayan salt Soleil on your website?
I don't know if I do, but I can have them put up in the next day or two because I do have them that I email out. I just don't know if the web developer put them on the site.
Okay.
But
well,
I do. I have a lot of different shortcuts that I have on there.
Yeah. So if everybody wants to go to www.phbodybalance.com, that's Marlene's website, and her phone number is on there as well. And like she said, she's got tips on there. And, yeah, if you could if you could get that Himalayan salt Soleil instructions put up there, that would be – you know what actually I can do as well? I will email it to everybody who's registered for the teleseminar and the JPT members. And so because I have your instructions, I'll email it out to everybody on the call as well.
All righty. So. And, the next part of her question is that there's a book called Your Body Mini Cries for Water, and if lemon is better, why? I think they do different things. Phytochemical nutrition is incredible because here's – you know, here's what I've experienced. I have nothing scientific to back this up other than I've been doing this for a very, very long time. And the, what happens is lemon will soften the gunk in your organs. Good oil sludge it up, and hydration pushes it through. And when you think about it, it's just basic physiology, but there's two foods. One food, artichokes, is the only natural food that will clean your liver. And so one of the things that I like to do is I buy a bag of frozen artichoke hearts, dice it up with lemon juice and oil, and use it as, you know, a dip when I want to do that. At the same time, asparagus cleans your kidneys. Well, these two things don't just clean the organs, they also fortify them. The kidney, the asparagus actually has a component in it that will extract toxins out of the kidneys. That's why it makes your urine smell when you eat it.
Oh,
so what
I wondered why that was.
Yeah, it's cleaning you.
Oh.
So what I do with asparagus is I'll buy, if I want to do a kidney liver passive cleanse, I'll buy a couple pounds of asparagus, and I'll put it into boiling water for about a minute and a half, and I'll have a sink of ice water next to it, and I'll dump it in there real quick. The ice water chills it, so it holds all the and asparagus is so core hard that it doesn't kill all the enzymes like everybody thinks, because it's only hitting the outside to make it a little bit softer. The inside
exactly.
is still raw. And so I do that, and then I bag it. After I dry it, I bag it up. And then what I do is I'll eat three spears of asparagus in between meals as a snack, and what Suzanne's talking about, a pinch of sea salt. So
yeah.
I salt the asparagus, and I eat that in between meals, and then I do the artichoke at least once during the day, and I do that for a week, probably every 5 or 6 weeks. And that does a nice, and drinking lemonade and the rooibos tea, and then that does a nice liver kidney passively cleanse, you know, passively cleanse that.
You really need to write a book.
Yeah, maybe we should do it together since you're so experienced.
Seriously. You seriously need to get a book out there because you've got so many good things.
Now, Suzanne is also saying that in terms of easily digested and absorbed vitamin minerals, doesn't a high-powered blender such as the Vitamins break down food particle cells completely enough to enable somebody with IBD to get a large number of healing nutrients from fresh organic foods? Yes. The one thing that I want to add to this is that I have another little shortcut on this, because one of the things that prevents people from doing this every day is that there's so much to prepare.
Yeah.
So what I do is I will get a bag of organic spinach, some tomatoes, avocados, cucumber. This is my standard green drink, by the way. I do spinach, tomatoes, cucumbers, and avocado. And then I also do omega oils, lemon juice, and sea salt. And I also use cayenne pepper, because cayenne pepper makes your blood move from your heart down to your toes and back up again. And so you don't have to do a lot of it, but when you're drinking pureed food, if you can add cayenne pepper, what it does is it really helps your blood move while you're giving your body all this passive food. And so what I do is I set up six glasses or six containers, and I chunk everything up, put it into the glasses, I squeeze about a third of a lemon into each one of them, and then I fill it with water. I put saran wrap over it, put them in the refrigerator, and then when I want, and they'll hold 3 days that way without losing enzyme activity. And so what I do, in my experience, and so what I do then is I just pull a glass and I puree one glass at a time and drink it. And I don't have to, I make it twice a week.
Oh, I see.
See? So everything's chunked up in the glass with saran wrap over it, and the lemon juice holds it fresh.
Ready to go.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have all that prep.
Yep, so I squeeze a third of a lemon and then fill it two-thirds of water and saran, and I have no prep except twice a week. So it takes me about 20 minutes twice a week to make up a dozen glasses.
And just enough refrigerator space to hold it.
And just enough refrigerator. But see, if you're not doing it for two people, you know, I do one a day is all.
Yeah.
And so I do it for my husband and I. We each have one. And I use, you know, I go down to the market and I get the mason jars with the handles and the lids, and that's what I use. And then I just dump it into the Vitamix, puree it, pour it back into the mason jar, drink it, and I'm done. And I just rinse out the Vitamix.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So that's another one. The next one is, hi, Ginny, I can hear you on the web, but I wanted to be able to join in the conversation. Can't get through. Michelle says, from Korea, I've been trying to attend, but I'm told my conference ID is wrong. 951106. Kind of late now. Maybe you can email it to her. That's from Seoul. Annie from Milwaukee. I'm reading these cold, so I don't even know. I haven't pre-looked
yeah.
at these questions. But I'll tell you, there's never a conversation that I have during the day, and I have many, 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 that we don't talk about poop and pee. So don't be offended, because the next ones, I think about that. After nearly every bowel movement, 15 to 60 minutes post, I will have a burning pain through my whole GI system. From the back of my bowel to the back of my throat, it can last 15 minutes to 3 days, depending on where I am in my menstrual cycle. 1 to 9, well, because you're releasing on your menstrual cycle. So 1 to 9 days of my menstrual cycle, the pain is at its most intense. Do you have any, well, I would, you know, my first indication is I would say, you know, do a bunch of clay, because the burning pain is going to be inflammation and
that's
acidity.
That's what I thought.
Uh-huh.
I thought,
yeah,
you know, actually, I had read that question previously, earlier, when my internet was working, and
mm-hmm.
I had thought, wow, that's a really hard question. But then when you were talking about the living clay, I thought, oh, ding, 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 that would probably really help her out.
Yep. Yep. You know, I think you should probably get that up on your website.
Yes. I'll send you the owner,
you know, the lady that owns this company also wrote the book Living Clay. You'll find her very fascinating, and she'll also come on and talk on your show and do a complete Living Clay training that's phenomenal.
Well,
so I'll send you her name and her phone number.
I carry the bentonite, and I do recommend it, but I know it's difficult for people who tend toward constipation because it can constipate them more. So this living clay saying that, okay, no, it's fine as long as you stay hydrated, that could be a really excellent tool.
I use the living clay also as I'll use that with magnesium salts in the bathtub as a detox
right.
bath.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be awesome.
And the really nice thing about doing the clay in the bath is that, you know, it's not so good if you're selling your house and people are coming through looking at it, but you can drain your tub and the clay will stay at the bottom and you can actually use it 2, 3, 4 times.
Oh, excellent.
I know, it's kind of fun.
That's the thing with you and the tips, I tell you.
I know. I can't help myself.
I tell you, I love it. I just love it.
Then we have Lori near Houston, which is actually, we're going to be moving to Houston Bay. So,
oh.
I have an intolerance to corn. Oh, really? So does everybody. They just don't know it. You do. I have recently switched to whole clean foods, 95% lean meats. When I eat something, I'm not 100% sure the ingredients. Sometimes my body reacts like it does to corn. Female yeast type issues. I'll tell you something. If you eat dairy and you have yeast, it'll flare it because a cow has a double digestive system, which means it has double lactic acid. And so when you ingest any kind of dairy, it hits your stomach and there's yeast at all, it's going to flare up. So probably what's happening is whatever you're eating has some yeast in it, and you've probably got yeast going on. Is this yeast stuff related to acids, et cetera? I'm allergic to all bases antibiotics. You know, this is an interesting question because what I would do if it were me is I would do silver to kill the yeast in my stomach and then clay to suck up, you know, all the dead bodies until I could get them out of there and then
yeah.
do the lemonade and the rooibos tea and so forth. But my feeling is that you probably, that, you know, without testing, you don't know. But my feeling is that your pH is probably low enough that you're growing a lot of because you're saying you have female yeast type issues. If you're having female yeast type issues, you've pretty much got yeast in your blood. And so anything you do, so here's the thing. If your immune system is really strong, anything you inhale or swallow, it will kill. Any antigen that you inhale or swallow, it will kill. If your immune system is harbored in your intestinal tract because you have IBS or colitis or whatnot, protecting your body so that these toxins don't go everywhere, your immune system's so focused there, when
yeah.
you inhale something or you swallow something that's an antigen, your immune system cannot leave the toxins to go rush and kill it. So So then you have a reaction to it, which either could be an allergic reaction or, in this case, a yeast reaction to it, where normally your immune system would help you out. It can't help you out because you're working on this other stuff. And so you have to do things proactively to protect that. And so a lot of that is what we're talking about tonight, which is target and also foundational. And eating clean is interesting because even if meat is 95% lean, it takes longer to digest meat than anything else. And if your stomach's creating a digestive process, you're creating acidity. So it's not giving your body a break. The last time I read the report, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Jenny, I think it's 3 days to digest meat. So a lot of bodybuilders eat a lot of meat because they like that slow protein intake. But if you're a sick person, here's what happens. You go to bed at night, and when your body's fully at rest, you have a healing cycle. If you do not stop digesting before you go to sleep, you skip that healing cycle. So you can do all the right things all day long, have meat for dinner, go to bed digesting, your body never stops working, so your healing cycle can't kick in because your healing cycle requires your body be at rest. It can't do more than, it can't do all the things you do, walk, talk, move, digest, and still heal. So healing is something that transpires in the middle of the night.
So do you recommend for people who need that kind of intensive healing that they don't, that they just eat fish and eggs for a time?
Yes. And so, see, here's how the schedule goes in terms of digestive process. Meat is the hardest thing to digest, then chicken, then turkey, then fish, then vegetables. And even I would go so far as to say if you're not pureeing, you should be stir-frying or steaming, because raw is very difficult to digest, too. If you're and the other thing I tell people is, it sounds like, you know, your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, but you, the more work your mouth does, the less work your body does. So the more you chew, the less work your body does.
Yeah.
And so you have to eat easily digested. Dinner is the most important meal of the day in terms of healing from a target situation.
So your soup would be like an ideal dinner.
Yeah, so that's what I do. See, I keep a perpetual crock-pot soup going all winter. Mm-hmm. And it also becomes good snack food.
Right.
So you can go get a second helping of soup at 9 o'clock at night. It's not going to bother you.
And do you put all kinds of vegetables in there? Do you put, like, potatoes, squash?
Now, it's interesting because turnip tastes just like potatoes.
Yeah, I love turnip.
In the soup.
Yeah. But much easier to digest.
That white turnip tastes just like potatoes, but I like the orange, too. You know, the rutabaga, they call it here, but I call it turnip. I like the orange and the white, but that has much less starch and acid than potatoes, but it tastes just like them in a soup.
Right.
And so I use whatever vegetables I have.
Carrot.
And I also cut up a lot of stuff in it, like kale and things like that. I just scissor cut it because it disappears anyway.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the kale breaks down?
Yeah, the kale will soften up like spinach.
Oh, right, right, right.
Mm-hmm, and disappear.
I'm going to try that. That's going number one on my list. I'm going to try your soup because I have a crock pot.
Mm-hmm. I have two crock pots, and if you don't have one and you're going to buy it, make sure it has a low heat setting.
Yes, mine does.
And make sure the pot can be pulled out.
Yes. And I would also say make sure it's ceramic, not Tefal coated.
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do. I mean, we try to, in the winter, it's very difficult to be as healthy as you can be in the summer, but I'm telling you, the crock pot soup thing works really well. And yes, the pureed food is obviously going to be optimal, but I don't know anybody that does that for dinner.
Yeah, really. Most people eat a huge, dodgy meal for dinner.
I have a quick candy or chocolate recipe for people, too, if they want to do it. I use carob, and then I use the concentrated powdered stevia.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is oil a saucepan, put the carob in it, and then I oil a bowl. And I use things like the softened, you know, coconut, not the dry, but maybe the softened coconut. You can buy frozen sometimes. Different things that you want in your candy that you can eat personally. And I'll put that in the bowl. I'll oil the bowl and put that in. You know, some people like crushed almonds and things like that. Anyway, I melt the carob, and then I start adding the stevia to sweeten it until it tastes like chocolate. And then I'll stir it into the oiled bowl with all the other things, lay it out on a cookie sheet, let it dry, break it up into pieces, and put it into a Ziploc bag, and then put it in the freezer.
Right.
And that's a pretty good nighttime chocolate thing. And I only make that maybe once every 2 months.
Yeah, and then you just take a piece out as you get the urge to have it.
Yes, and the other thing I do for, like, ice cream is I'll use coconut milk and lemonade and put that into those ice pops, or just coconut milk with a little stevia, depending on how sweet the coconut milk is. But that's coconut milk's extremely interesting. You know, it's such a good food.
Yes. And you can get, there is a brand, I can't remember what it is offhand. I've seen, there's a company in the States and in Canada, and you can get pure coconut milk with no added carrageenan or guar gum or any thickeners. You just have to find it, and then what I do is I find that one, and then I order a case. And
yes.
I keep it in my garage.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
I'm going to unmute the line here so that if there's anybody on the call who wants to ask a question, they can have a chance. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. Okay, so is there anybody who would like to ask Marlene a question? Speak
we may
now.
Have stayed on too long that everybody fell off.
Yeah.
We tend to do that, Jenny.
I know. All right, I'm going to go back to mute again then. Well, the other thing that happens, too, I think, is that people realize, oh, I don't have to be on the phone. I can listen to it on the webcast and just submit my question using the question box and don't pay any long-distance charges. So
exactly.
I think we lose
well,
people
yeah,
that way, it, too.
Exactly. And you know, kind of where I want to end this is that the domino effect of poor nutrition is when you lack nutrition and you lack hydration, you
yes.
become acidic and you have symptoms. And when you're very acidic, you have chronic symptoms. And when you become extremely acidic, you're going to get a diagnosis. And
right.
it's not as though everybody's walking around saying, oh, I'm doing all the wrong things and I'm what it is degradation of food, water, and air has created this environment, and not the environment happened before anyone was trained in how to be defensive about the environment.
Right.
See, it kind of crept up on us, and it was a way of life, right?
Yes.
And I'll tell you that the symptomology of being sick and tired or allergies or cholesterol or digestive or diabetes or overweight, the list goes on, you know, not sleeping, going to bed, waking up or, you know, waking up feeling like you haven't slept or not being able to get to sleep, you know, or getting tired in the afternoon, all those things are strong indications that the first big thing is dehydration and the second
yes.
Is nutrition. But the physician's desk reference, I don't know if you've read this or not, but only 10 to 20% of the vitamins and minerals sold over the counter are absorbable by the body.
Yes. That was I wanted to get this one question in for sure before we end. So, and that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about. So for people in a disease state, do you recommend mineral supplementation?
Absolutely.
You know, and, okay, and then what do you recommend?
Well, first of all, everybody's in a calcium deficit. And
mm-hmm.
the bone support, for example, is calcium, magnesium, boron, zinc, and copper. So what it does is it actually drives it to the bone and also makes up the deficit. When you're talking about like an ionic mineral complex like that, what it does is it fills a hole. So you start out and you front load it, or what you know we call front loading, which means you know you're filling up the hole that's empty, and then you keep a certain amount coming in. As you're doing that, you build your foundation and get balance, so you can do less and less and less and less of it. So when your body stops stealing calcium, you really don't need calcium. I do calcium a couple times a week.
Okay.
I don't do it every day.
So I know for the bone support product, that's the one I'm taking right now. I'm testing it. My mom's been on it too.
Mm-hmm.
The recommended dose for that is one tablespoon a day.
Yes. Yeah, so I would do one in the morning and one before
yeah.
I went to sleep.
Okay.
On my first week. And then my second week, I would do a teaspoon in the morning and 2 teaspoons before I go to sleep. And the reason is, even though it says a tablespoon a day, it doesn't mean you have to take it all at once. But taking calcium at night is going to be more beneficial than the morning. Here's what happens. We wake up and we do all the right things all day long. We go to sleep and our pH falls out overnight and we have to start over the next day. So it's very hard to get ahead of the bell curve when you're trying to target like you are with your clients. And so what you want to do is try to keep your pH up overnight so that you can hit the street running in the morning and be ahead of the bell curve a little bit more every single day. So calcium is really good to do that. Potassium is extraordinary to do that because potassium carries a 14 pH. So what I do sometimes with people is I will have them do the a couple of teaspoons of the bone support when they go to bed, but then I have them put a teaspoon of it into a glass of water on their nightstand.
Right.
And if they wake up in the middle of the night, they're drinking calcium water.
Right.
You know, and so that's always a good thing. The other ionic minerals, I mean, there's a tremendous formula, different formulas you can make. And one thing that I always suggest people do is whenever you go to a medical doctor is you always have them do a mineral panel so that you can identify where your deficits are. You can do it. You can do it by symptom. I can do it. Like, I have people send me their symptoms. They don't have to be in order. You know, when you read symptoms as often as I do, you know, you just kind of glance through it and go, okay, iron, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The problem with an iron supplement is it usually makes your poop really hard like concrete.
Yeah.
So doing an ionic or angstrom iron is amazing because it gives you the iron you need and it relieves your digestive system. So it's very... It's a passive way to get a lot of iron.
You know, the one I'm testing right now, the dosage on the side of it says that 1 teaspoon is the equivalent of 10 milligrams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, so I was just testing it. I thought, I'm just going to increase and see what happens. So I got up to 8 teaspoons, and at 8 teaspoons... it did turn my stool that dark green color, and it did constipate me, even though it was nanoparticle sized. So pretty interesting, hey, because it's supposed to completely bypass the digestive system. But I found that when I pushed it to that really high dosage,
do you know what's interesting about the 8 teaspoons? Because if your bowel movements turn that bright green, you're getting the acidity out of the intestinal tract, which is interesting if it turned concrete at the same time.
No, it didn't. It did not go hard. It just changed color.
Okay, what that is your bowels flushed.
Ah.
Your bowel flushed. That's what happens when you cleanse too hard.
Right.
Your bowels will flush. So here's what happened. Your body went on overload of iron and had to get rid of it.
Yes.
And it flushed your bowels to do it.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense because when I've tested, just say, a normal iron supplement previously, and if I'm anemic, I can take it, and there won't be much, if any, change in my stool color. But when I'm not anemic and I taste it, boom, my stool goes that greenish-black color immediately.
Mm-hmm. Too much, yeah.
So, and I always wondered, why does it turn
the
stool? But that makes sense, because my body's flushing it out. It doesn't need it.
But it's interesting that you got up to 8 teaspoons before your bowels flushed.
Well, yes, exactly. Well, you know what? And I had my blood work done, and my ferritin stores were very low.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why part of the reason why I'm testing it is.
Now, the best way to do that is I always tell people to put it in a big eyedropper bottle.
Yeah.
And do it like, so say you're low in iron. The best way to get your iron to a normal state fast is to put it into an eyedropper bottle, put it under your tongue, let it absorb through your cheeks or under your tongue.
Right.
And do it several times a day. Just carry it in your purse whenever you think about it. Just do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. And you do that for a week and then go to, if it says a teaspoon a day, then go to half a teaspoon in the morning, half a teaspoon at night. The one thing about supplementation that I've really truly learned is a little bit more often is much more effective than a lot all at once.
Right.
And so when you can spread it out into an eyedropper and have it absorb through your mouth instead of going into your stomach and absorbing through your digestive tract, you're going to get a lot more, and it's going to feed the hole. It's going to fill it up and bring you back to normal much faster.
Well, I'll tell you a little experiment I've been doing with the bone support.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you know, and by the way, I did contact him to find out what exactly, I did a whole bunch of research because I'm like, okay, what size is nanoparticle? Within
mm-hmm.
nanoparticle, what are the sizings? And then where does angstrom fall on that thing? So I got everything, you know, sorted from, you know, going into the, you know, the scientific articles and whatnot. And so then I emailed Jim, who owns the Mini Minerals.
Mm-hmm. He was
company.
One of my first mentors. Did he tell you that?
No.
Yep.
I didn't know that. So basically he said, okay, his product is 0.1, let me just look at it here so I get it correct, is ultrafine nanoparticles, so 1 nanometer, which
mm-hmm.
is bigger than angstrom. But so here's the thing, though, because it is a very small nanoparticle, I then went into PubMed and I did research on the nanoparticle minerals. Like, what are they testing it for in the clinical trials? What kinds of things are they doing? And the dental field is taking nanoparticle minerals that are used in bone formation, so exactly what's in bone support. They're mixing it with the filling composite material and doing fillings with it. And it prevents decay like
Isn't that interesting?
So I thought, oh, you know what I'm going to start doing? After I brush my teeth, I'm going to take a capful of that bone support, and I'm just going to hold it in my mouth and
That's
push
what
it
I
around
do.
My teeth
yeah.
for as long as I can.
That's great. And you know what else? It works on fingernails.
All right. You just dip
yeah.
your fingernails in it.
Yeah. It works on fingernails. Isn't that wild?
Interesting. Well,
I know. It's like your whole body can just absorb this stuff. That's
yeah.
what you want, though. You want to do supplementation that can work externally, internally, you know?
Exactly.
That's the key. But that's fascinating information about the dentist.
Yes. Yeah, it's really. And they also, there was quite a bit of research done on in the osteoporosis field where they were using the nanoparticle minerals, and the uptake and the new formation of bone was you know, hugely improved over conventional mineral supplementation.
Yeah, and the thing is you want to bring your – and we should talk about how to test your pH. You want to get some pH test strips, and then you do it first thing in the morning when you wake up before you brush, eat, drink, or think.
Okay.
So you either put it on your nightstand or on your toilet because you want to test your pH
mm-hmm.
Before any – especially men. You know, as soon as they think about food, their saliva starts going, and that's highly alkaline.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. See, so you want to do it like immediately. And then what you want to do is test for about 5 to 7 mornings. They don't have to be in a row, but they need to be consistent, meaning the same thing kind of happened the night before, you know, the day before.
Right.
You didn't go out until midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever. And then once you've got 5 to 7 readings, then you average them, and that will give you a pretty solid pH on your tissues and your blood environment. And then you start to do things to, and in the process you can as well because it takes a bit to start to get it up. And so I found like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue runs around a 6.0 to a 6.2, you know. And
okay.
you can kind of generally tell where somebody's at once you kind of get used to these different scales and what's going on with them. But
right.
what's interesting is then you just take it a couple times a month. And what you're looking for is your first spike. Once you get your first spike, then the rest of them are easy. It's the
first
one that's the hardest.
Your first spike to what? Oh, to increasing your
alkalinity.
To
move it up.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to wrap up now, Marlene. Is that okay, or did you have anything
Perfect.
Else?
Perfect. Nope, we're good. I just wanted to get that in.
So just so everybody knows, Marlene Cray's website is www.phbodybalance.com, and you can get those pH test strips. You can get all of the supplements and things we've been talking about on her site, and her phone number is also on there, and she is very generous with her time. She'll talk to anybody who calls up. So, Marlene, I don't know quite how you managed to do that without spending your whole life on the phone, but
Well, I don't
nice
personally answer the phone, so people typically have to ask for me, but I am usually here Monday through Friday.
Okay, great. Well, thank you
much. You know what? I kind of do it a very nice way because I'll say, you know, email me your symptoms, and I'll look at them, and I'll tell you what I would do. And so it doesn't take quite as long as you think because I'm just telling them how I would do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you've written your book, you can say, go get my
book. Read the book.
It's all in there.
Oh, here's my book.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you again, Marlene. And I'm sure, you know, if we have any follow-up questions or whatnot, people can just get in touch with you directly at phbodybalance.com.
Well, thank you, Jenny. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Do I need to do anything?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Go on the page. Yeah, I forgot about that. Go on that page there and click on Stop Recording.